was In My Love for You by Satan's Rats. Before that was Proxy Love by HMLTD. And before we get into some bin cuts, Rowhouse Cinema joins you in supporting WRCT. Rowhouse Cinema is a single screen theater in the historic Lawrenceville neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Each week they choose a new movie theme showing classic, cult, foreign, animation, fun, and fascinating films in a magical setting. Their concession stand features natural popcorn with real butter, craft beer, and vegan options. Rowhouse Cinema is located at 4115 Butler Street in Lawrenceville. For more information, visit their website at www.rowhousecinema.com or call 412-904-3225. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. This has been our Valentine's show of Trapdoor on WRCT Pittsburgh. Hope you've been having a good Valentine's Day. We're going to finish this up with Men Ruin Things by Helvetia, followed by Peer to Peer by Fong Tran, followed by Garçon by Shad.
I've been in a great mood, like listening to Hey Jude on Quaaludes in late June. But Jesus, mad ladies and only eight dudes. I fix pain and I break rules. I make loot and I pay dues. I eat legumes and grapefruits. Took a break and then I came through like... really want to hear the boy stop, put his gifts back in the toy box.
Don't stop.
Everything I kick, Muay Thai. What I drip, yeah. Soy sauce. Heads flipped like he did a coin toss. Young Shay demonstrated the dedication required to move through the fire. Distribute the flyers in the cold where there ain't no tissue for crying, and the issues is dire. He spit through the wire, bit through brick, chip tooth, true grit, desire. This is Handel's Messiah by a one-man choir. Your boy
You've been listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
You're listening to Audible Sounds on 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
freaks. Supply and demand's the only commandment we preach. Each man is a brand, each night famine and feast. So we quote, I sell, therefore I am in these streets. The people are sick, nothing that a needle to fix. We need presents, we just get receipts for the gifts. Playing God, we just gotta cease and desist. When our own souls wish that we would cease to exist. We out of touch now. We out of touch now. In the six like touchdown. I was tripping, I just touched down. Touch now. Attach the roots. I don't mean no metaphor. I'm talking about these packaged foods, mass produced. Who's the most impacted group? Yes, we the black and blue. Really, it's a question that's connected to the facts and truth. Lands and plants and passion fruits. We got crashing moods, diseases, and other attributes. Lack of direction from having no grasp of past and future. Attitude is none. Plus, we love to escape. We love entertainment, especially if it's public disgrace. No love and embraces. Nothing is sacred. These public debates, discussions of late. No trust in the space, the drugs in the safe, the plugs in the wall, and all that to say, the main cause of all the suffering and hate. We out of touch now. Too out of touch now. In the six life touchdown. I was tripping, I just touched down.
I was tripping, I just touched down.
We out of touch now.
How we come a long way.
Touchdown.
We're heading in the wrong.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
WICT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
You're listening to Audible Sounds right here at WRCT. And at the top of the show, we had some pretty electrifying jazz from Patrick Shiroshi with The Long Bright Dark, the conclusion to his album entitled Hidemi. After that, we had some smoother jazz from Alex Hamburger with the song Unconditional Love. Finally, we had the rapper Shad with a track off of his latest release, Towel, with the track entitled Out of Touch. Up next, we got some more surprises for you. Namely, we've got the opening track, Prowl of the Concavenator, off of the album Slow and Heavy by dinosaur-themed dungeon synth band Diplodocus. And that's right here at 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Row House Cinema joins you in supporting WRCT. Row House Cinema is a single-screen theater in the historic Lawrenceville neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Each week they choose a new movie theme showing classic, cult, foreign, animation, fun, and fascinating films in a magical setting. Their concession stand features natural popcorn with real butter, craft beer, and vegan options. Row House Cinema is located at 4115 Butler Street in Lawrenceville. For more information, visit their website at www.rowhousecinema.com or call 412-904-3225. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Zabo and Your Brain has no business being on public airways. It's Off the Rails Radio, Fridays 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WRCT Pittsburgh. listening to Audible Sounds, and that was Stand Next to Me by Bad Banana off of the album Crutchfield, also known as Katie Crutchfield of Waxahachie's former band. And incidentally, before that we played the song Clean Kill by Ian McKay's new band, Corky. Coming up, we're going out with the entire EP, Hair Long and Freaky by Disco and Speaky, right here on WRCT. Pac-Man Show started as a community radio show called Midweek Politics in the basement of WXOJ's studio in Northampton, Massachusetts. The focus of the show is modern American politics and society, airing on WRCT Monday through Friday from 7 to 8 a.m.
Tell you what I want. The more I see, more.
That's it for this installment of Audible Sounds. Thank you all so much for listening right here at 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh.
Well, everybody, it's really incredible. I decide, hey, you know what? It'd be a great thing to take a break from dealing with a newborn baby and do a show. I check out what's been happening at the Trump riot hearings, and the big headline is big, massive dumps, as if that's not what I've already been dealing with at home. Incredible second day in the Trump riot hearings. Now, of course, many of you are already familiar with this entire dumps thing.
Dumps.
Yeah, you guys remember that, right?
Big, massive dumps.
Sure. Well, yesterday at the Trump riot hearings, they actually played the video. Big, massive dumps trends on Twitter after January 6th committee airs infamous Trump interview with Maria Bartiromo. Big, massive dumps have gone completely mainstream, dominating yesterday's second day of the Trump riot hearings. And my audience, of course, knows about it. This is the original. This was sort of setting the stage for explaining the different elements of Donald Trump's campaign to steal the election. For those who may not remember, this is that critical moment in American political history. Big, massive dumps.
And what happened, if you watched the election, I was called by the biggest people.
People.
Saying, congratulations, political people. Congratulations, sir, you just won the election. It was 10 o'clock and you looked at the numbers and I'm sure you felt that way.
Sure.
This election was over. And then they did dumps. They call them dumps, big, massive dumps in Michigan and Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And all over.
Okay, so that is one aspect of all of the not only unproven, but debunked conspiracy theories about the election. And we're going to get into more specific claims that the January 6th committee did a really good job of saying, here's the claim, here's someone who knows saying it's bogus. And this is Republicans mostly presenting this testimony, which we will get to. But one other aspect in general of thinking about the January 6th riots is, was Trump a factor in the people that were rioting being there rioting? In other words, were they there because of something that Donald Trump said? And the January 6th committee closed yesterday's hearing with a video of exactly that, of Trump supporters saying they were there because of the things Trump said, including that there were, excuse the term, massive dumps. Take a listen to this.
I know exactly what's going on right now. Fake election. They think they're going to cheat us out of our vote and put communist Biden in office. It ain't f***ing happening today, buddy.
You voted?
Yes, sir.
How'd it go?
Voted early. It went well, except for the can't really trust the software. Dominion software all over.
We voted, and right in the top right-hand corner of the Dominion voting machine that we used, there was a Wi-Fi symbol with five bars.
Uh-oh.
So that most definitely connected to the internet, without a doubt. So they stole that from us twice. We're not doing it anymore. We're not taking it anymore. So we're standing up. We're here. And whatever happens, we're not laying down again.
I'm from Pennsylvania. It didn't work.
Okay, so of an individual coughing a lot, those are all specific claims being made by Trump and people around him. So that's the sort of broader context for yesterday's hearings. Let's now get into some of the specific claims. Every central claim about the 2020 election made by failed former President Donald Trump and the people around him, including people like Mark Meadows, but also wackier people like Sidney Powell, Mike Pillow Lindell, and others. Every single one of those claims was systematically contradicted and debunked by mostly Republican testimony, as we saw during yesterday's second day of the Trump riot hearings. I'm going to give you some examples here, and you will see how comprehensively every single one of these claims is easily refuted. Former Philadelphia City Commissioner Al Schmidt, a Republican, said there is no evidence of even 8 dead people voting, never mind the 8,000 dead voters that Trump and people around him claimed.
The claim that dead people were voting. In fact, Mr. Giuliani told Pennsylvania state legislators that 8,000 dead people voted in Pennsylvania. You investigated those claims of voter fraud. Can you tell us what you found?
Not only was there not evidence of 8,000 dead voters voting in Pennsylvania, there wasn't evidence of 8. We took seriously every case that was referred to us, no matter how fantastical, no matter how absurd, and took every one of those seriously, including these.
So it's not that they say, well, you have to investigate all of it. It was investigated. You just don't like the outcome of that investigation. And dead voters, that's one bucket of claims. We've looked into it extensively. There was an investigation, I believe it was in Michigan, where they started with a list of I believe it was 10,000 supposedly dead voters. I believe it was The Guardian, if not the BBC. They said, let's randomly choose. I think it was 35 of the 1,000 or 2,000, whatever. Let's investigate them. And then with those 35, they found most of them, there was evidence that the people were alive. Like, there was just really no reason to think that they were dead. In a few cases, it was people who were indeed alive at the time that they voted. And then when they mailed in their ballot, then they died. Nothing illegal there. In some cases, there was like junior, senior confusion. I mean, it was all just picked apart. Next claim, Georgia smuggled ballots. Former acting deputy attorney general testifies that he personally investigated the Georgia smuggled ballots, found nothing, told him it was false, but it didn't matter.
To play again a testimony from Mr. Donahue, who appeared before the committee before today.
Mr. Donahue, we talked at some length about whether or not the White House or the president was informed about the Antrim report. On the result of the investigations, the interviews that had gone on Fulton County, how would those results have been communicated to the White House, to the president?
I don't know how they were initially communicated. I do know that they came up in subsequent conversations with the president, and Dad Rose and I essentially told him, we looked into that, and it's just not true.
Okay, so he was informed.
I told the president myself that several times in several conversations, that these allegations about ballots being smuggled in a suitcase and run through the machine several times, it was not true. That we looked at the video, we interviewed the witnesses, it was not true.
Right.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
So there is another claim, the idea of ballots smuggled in, and there were videos with ominous music of suitcases in different places with no reason whatsoever to believe that the suitcases contained fraudulent ballots. People have suitcases. It's not like a huge smoking gun in and of itself. And Trump was told, and yet he continued to repeat it. And then lastly, again, just as another example, we could do this all day, but I won't do it to you. The other claim was more votes than voters in Philadelphia. Philadelphia and Pennsylvania in general became a big focus because they stopped counting and then started again. Of course, if you understand the scheduling for vote counting in Philadelphia, you would know that they just have a schedule. They stop counting and then they start again the next morning. Not really evidence of anything. But the other claim was more votes than voters. And William Barr, Trump's own attorney general, says it's not true. There were not more votes than voters. And anybody just Googling Philadelphia, Pennsylvania population would be able to realize that.
I'd like to turn to President Trump's false allegations about election integrity in Philadelphia. The attorney general discussed these allegations at some length.
You know, the idea, the president has repeatedly suggested that there was some kind of outpouring of unexpected votes in inner city areas like Philadelphia as recently as January 13th, when he walked off the NPR set. he was asked by the interviewer, what's your evidence of fraud? And he said, more people voted in Philadelphia than there were voters. And that was absolute rubbish.
Right.
The turnout in Philadelphia was in line with the state's turnout. And in fact, it was not as impressive as many suburban counties. And there was nothing strange about the Philadelphia turnout. It wasn't like there was all these unexpected votes that came out in Philadelphia. So,
right.
You know, I think once you actually look at the votes and then... there's an obvious explanation. He, for example, in Pennsylvania, Trump ran weaker than the Republican ticket generally. He ran weaker than two of the state candidates.
Anyway, the point is William Barr knows that it was all BS. So every single one of these claims, what do we know about them? We know two important things. One, there was not actually any evidence for them, but maybe even more importantly, two, there were Republicans around Trump who knew the claims were BS and would tell Trump that they were BS, and it did not matter. So a very critical moment in yesterday's Trump riot hearings. Last thing I want to look at on the Trump riot hearings day two before we go to a break. There are often stories that become stories for good reason. Like, for example, that Rudy Giuliani was appearing regularly drunk in different places and was giving people bad advice on the basis of being drunk. And whenever it would come up, and we've talked about it before, there were people on the right who would just deny it. And there would be some who would come out and say, you're making fun of alcoholism. And of course, we are not making fun of alcoholism. Alcoholism is a serious disease, very serious, horrible, horrible disease. The issue was whether there are people close to Donald Trump giving him advice who are not in a proper state of mind to be doing so. And it was widely reported that Rudy Giuliani was moved from appearing on TV at night to the morning with the idea that maybe he would not be drunk in those cases. And it was just a widely understood and reported thing. Well, yesterday's hearing started with Liz Cheney. One of the things that turned out in the investigation is that Rudy Giuliani was regularly drunk and giving Donald Trump advice. And, to be perfectly frank, it sort of makes everything more logical because the storyline that Trump ultimately attached to makes a lot more sense if you say it's an inebriated person storyline. It's like, okay, well, that's so obvious that it sounds like what a drunk person would say happened at the election. Take a listen.
You will hear firsthand testimony that the president's campaign advisors urged him to await the counting of votes and not to declare victory on election night. The president understood even before the election that many more Biden voters had voted by mail because President Trump ignored the advice of his campaign experts and told his supporters only to vote in person. Donald Trump knew before the election that the counting of those mail-in ballots in several states would not begin until late in the day.
Correct.
And would not be complete for multiple days. This was expected, reported, and widely known. You will also hear testimony that President Trump rejected the advice of his campaign experts on election night and instead followed the course recommended by an apparently inebriated Rudy Giuliani to just claim he won and insist that the vote counting stop.
So one of the big questions and one of the big things that is fascistic and authoritarian is, just say you won. Just say you won is sort of the motto of this entire farce, right? Just say you won. And that's what Trump did. He came out at 2-something in the morning on election day and said, I won. And we now have learned it was apparently the drunk idea of Rudy Giuliani. And of course, just as a reminder, many instances of Rudy apparently drunk. Here's one that we covered. This was a 9/11 dinner where Rudy a not with it, Rudy.
Can you imagine that Tony Blinken or Miley? How's that guy a general? Jesus. The other day, he said that the Bagram Air Force Base is not strategically important. I wanted to grab his, what do you have, 5 stars, 10 stars, 12 stars? He has so many stars that come up into his ears. I wanted to grab his stars, shove it down his throat, and say, it's 400 miles from China, ass. China is going to be our enemy for the next 40 years. You have an air base 400 miles from them, and you're giving it up, idiot.
Yeah, that may be the most drunk anyone has ever been at any kind of major speech. So every claim backed up by the investigation so far. Day three is today, and we will have more coverage tomorrow. Quick break. Back after this. Find me on Twitter at Deep Hackman. Okay, let's do a little bit more coverage of yesterday's second day of the January 6th committee hearings. Another major and obvious scam that we all knew about, except, of course, for the millions of Trumpists who donated to it, is that this so-called Trump Official Election Defense Fund, which was going to fund recounts and lawsuits and audits and all these different things, it was a scam. It was a grift. It was, if you looked at the fine print, obviously another attempt for Trump to enrich himself by raising money and then enrich his friends and family by hiring friends and family and paying them out of those donated funds. Well, it's another thing we suspected, which the January 6th committee has now apparently confirmed to be true. We have a video from yesterday's hearing where Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren explains that the Trump Official Election Defense Fund didn't actually exist. It was yet another Trump grift. And again, a grift which victimizes his supporters. Progressives were not donating to Trump's Election Defense Fund. It is a grift of his own supporters.
I'm senior investigative counsel with the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. Between Election Day and January 6th, the Trump campaign sent millions of fundraising emails to Trump supporters,
yes,
sometimes as many as 25 a day. The emails claimed the, quote, left-wing mob was undermining the election, implored supporters to, quote, step up to protect the integrity of the election, and encouraged them to, quote, fight back. But as the Select Committee has demonstrated, the Trump campaign knew these claims of voter fraud were false, yet they continued to barrage small-dollar donors with emails, encouraging them to donate to something called the Official Election Defense Fund. The Select Committee discovered no such fund existed.
I don't believe there is actually a fund called the Election Defense Fund.
Is it fair to say the Election Defense Fund was another, as I think we've called it, a marketing tactic?
Yes.
And tell us about these funds as marketing tactics.
Just a topic matter, where money could potentially go to be, how money could potentially be used.
The claims that the election was stolen were so successful, President Trump and his allies raised $250
million. $250
million.
Remember, when I brought the story of the grift to you, only about $70 million had been raised. And then, okay, we figured out it's another grift. I wasn't going to keep updating you about the amount of money. By the time it was all said and done, $250 million had been raised. And it's a grift all the way down. As an example of how the grift was even further used for enriching Trump's friends and family, Kimberly Guilfoyle, the then girlfriend, maybe now fiance or wife, I don't know, of Don Jr., she spoke for 2.5 minutes at the rally on January 6th. She was reportedly paid $60,000 for that speech, and that is the money that came from the so-called Election Defense Fund, which it's sort of like if I were to say, hey, please donate to the Democracy Defense Fund at the David Pakman Show. If you're just making a donation to the David Pakman Show, just because I call it something doesn't mean it exists and it doesn't mean it's being used for that. Like, it just gets mixed in with the money that comes in for memberships and whatever else. Just because you put on an email Official Election Defense Fund doesn't mean it's a real thing. And this was so obvious that it was going on that the sad part is it's news to people. And many of the small donors who got grifted and scammed are never going to know it. Now, is it a crime? That's a great question. Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren was asked, is that a crime? And she said it's for someone else to decide.
We're a legislative committee. Right. And it's clear that he intentionally misled his donors, asked them to donate to a fund that didn't exist, and used the money raised for something other than what he said.
Yep.
Now, it's for someone else to decide whether that's criminal or not. That's not the purview of a legislative committee.
Yes, and Merrick Garland, Attorney General, said they are certainly watching the hearings at the Justice Department, but who knows what the outcome will be? Another scam, another grift, not a surprise to viewers and listeners of this show. I have some fascinating audio and video to play for you. in the midst of the January 6th committee hearings, Rudy Giuliani said on his podcast, which was released right as the House committee was holding its hearings, Rudy puts out a podcast and he says, he admits to the entire thing. He says the whole point of the rally on January 6th and of subsequently going down to the Capitol, the point of it, the goal of it, the objective was to try to get electoral votes that Donald Trump didn't actually earn. Listen to the language Rudy uses here. OK, you really have to. This is one of those. It's linguistically important to listen to the words used.
When the president put out the first notice of this rally, which actually was somewhere in mid-December for a January 6th rally on the day that the Electoral College vote was going to be taken. The whole purpose of it was a rally in support of the president's bid for electoral votes, in the sense that he had proven and shown that he had really won these states and he was being deprived of these states unfairly and illegally.
A bid. The point of the rally was to support Trump's bid for electoral votes. You don't bid for electoral votes. You either won them or you didn't. And it is really, I know the Eggman's going to write in about it, it's Kafkaesque language. You don't make a bid for electoral votes. You don't make a case for electoral votes. You don't argue about electoral votes. You don't rally. You either win them or you don't. How can a rally of people saying things be an argument for electoral votes? You either won them or you didn't. And if you think that something was wrong, you fight it in court. That's the venue where you fight it, where Trump tried to fight it. And I believe it was 68 cases, 63 or 68 cases that he lost. That's the one venue where you argue for electoral votes. And it's an admission that the whole point of what happened on January 6th was try to get votes you didn't actually win. End of story, case in point. And Rudy Giuliani admitting to the entire thing. All right. One more story before we move on to other things, sort of in this world of election fraud and claims and riots and all these different things. Former White House counsel Norm Eisen is now saying that he believes Trump is likely to be prosecuted in Georgia. And this, I got a bunch of emails about this. This is sort of separate from the Trump riot hearings. This is specifically in the state of Georgia. Business Insider reporting. Former White House special counsel says Trump is likely to be prosecuted in Georgia because of particularly strong evidence. Former President Donald Trump could be prosecuted in Georgia for his attempts to overturn the state's election results in 2020. Norm Eisen, former White House special counsel for ethics, told CNN it's likely Trump will be prosecuted because of particularly strong evidence. Quote, I think the evidence is particularly strong for a prosecution in the state of Georgia, where the Atlanta DA has convened a special grand jury. Remember that that's where Fulton County DA Fannie Willis wanted a special grand jury to look at Trump's attempts to overturn the election there. The grand jury was convened last month. You have to recall that this is the state in which Trump wanted those 11,780 votes that he didn't earn.
I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break.
And that is very, very strong evidence. It's a clear attempt to extort. This was after the third recount in December of 2020, which confirmed again Joe Biden won Georgia. You might remember that Georgia took a while to flip to blue on the map that most media outlets were using because it was being challenged in a more real way than what was being done in other states. Joe Biden won it. And Donald Trump is on a recording after we knew that he had lost, saying, find me the votes, saying there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, you've recalculated. And look, it turns out that Donald Trump actually won. And remember that when the Georgia Secretary of State wouldn't go with it, and I don't believe that the Georgia Secretary of State is great in any way, but he was unwilling to go with it. Donald Trump then started the mob boss type underhanded threats. Listen, this is going to be costly in many ways, Trump said. Costly in many ways. It is straight up mob vocabulary, and he's recorded doing it. So the question now, this is parallel to the January 6th investigation. Is there going to be an indictment? Are there going to be charges coming out of Georgia? And I know, listen, I'm with everybody. Even if you get charges, it doesn't necessarily mean anything major is going to happen. But charging a former president is a really big deal. If there being charges would be a major, major deal. We will have all of these clips on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. Bottom line it for me. At the end of the day, where are you right now? Does Trump get charged anywhere? Federally, Georgia, Pennsylvania, just any. Will there be any charges against Trump or not? Let me know your thoughts in a comment, in a tweet, in an email to info@davidpakman.com. Today, we're going to be speaking with Sheila Heen, who's a Harvard Law School professor, founder of Triad Consulting, and also co-author of the New York Times bestsellers Difficult Conversations, as well as Thanks for the Feedback. Sheila, it's really great to have you on today.
I'm delighted to be here.
So every week I get questions from people in my audience. I have this very big political disagreement with my mom, and I want to know how to handle it. Or I have this difficult situation with my coworkers politically, and I want to know how to handle it. And people ask me for advice. And one of the first things I say is, well, to figure out the right path forward, you kind of first have to think about what you want the outcome to be. In other words, in a political disagreement with your mom, what's more important, proving her wrong or maintaining a relationship with your mom, for example, depending on what you expect might happen. So can you kind of open up by giving us a basic framework in terms of how to think generally about some of these difficult conversations that people sometimes have?
Absolutely. And David, I think you're right on the money, meaning I think one of the core questions is, what is my purpose in having a conversation? Because if my purpose is to prove her wrong, that is not necessarily going to change her mind. You may have noticed that.
True.
Right? Because it's totally clear to you that you have proven her wrong, and yet her views persist.
Right.
And so I think that's part of the struggle, which is that I actually think that there are things that are hard about just being in relationship with someone who holds a view that you find incredibly disturbing, upsetting, wrongheaded, foolish, uninformed. Should we keep going? What
right.
would you add?
All those things. Yeah, right, right. And it's important also because there's a range of the example I give often is when people say, are you friends with like radical right people, for example? I'll say, listen, if someone thinks the tax rate should be 2 points lower than I do, it's not a big deal. It's just a disagreement, and we can kind of just work through that. It's not really going to affect too many things about my ability to relate to them. If they believe there's a secret cabal of Jews controlling every aspect of, you know, that's going to be a little bit different in terms of our ability to relate to each other. So it seems like that context is important, too.
I think that that's exactly right. And so I think what we're talking about are views that feel like they hit at the core of who we are.
Yes.
Or that suggest a threat to something that we hold really dear. And so in this weird way, there's like an identity issue that comes with like, how could I, being who I am and what I care about and what I want people to see about who I am and respect about who I am, how could I be fill in the blank, friends with, family with, neighbors with, coworkers with this person who at least the caricature of the view that they hold in some way invalidates, dismisses, or oppresses something that really matters to me about who I am. And just that, that identity quake that comes with that question, I think is why we feel like we need to have a conversation with them.
Right. And what would thinking of techniques, you know, sometimes it'll be like, hey, we need to talk, or you said something that really offended me, starting with how one felt. There's all these different tactics that are often mentioned. Is there some universal best way to kind of start some of these conversations, or does it really depend on who the person is and what you're going to talk about?
So I think that the thing that it depends most on is negotiating with yourself about your purpose.
Yeah.
So, for instance, the couple of examples that you just gave, if they just said something or did something that I want to raise, well, then there is a purpose to the conversation. And my purpose would be, I want to share with you sort of what impact that had for me, or why I found it upsetting or frustrating, or that you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how, and we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids need to know the dangers and how to avoid them. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids, because when you talk, they hear you.
Hi, this is Greg Keeler with Blue Rodeo here, 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Every day, baby, when the sun goes down, get with my party and I begin to clown. I don't care what the people's thinking. I ain't drunk, I'm just drinking. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. One more round won't get me down. I came home last night all full of my lush. Baby started to fuss and I said, honey, hush. I don't care what you're thinking. I ain't drunk, I'm just drinking. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. One more round won't get me down. And don't try to spoil my fun. I've got to have a little drink when my day's work's done. I don't care what you are thinking. I ain't drunk, I'm just drinking. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. One more round won't get me down. I want to pet you now, baby, just before I go. I'll be back tomorrow night, we can drink some more. We don't care what the people's thinking. We ain't drunk, we just drink. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. Set 'em up, another round. One more round won't get me down. I ain't drunk, I'm just drinking, that's all.
Chickadee.